Sort of come to order. We have a lot of people here, but not quite enough to do official business.
That's the rumor.
Upton Schumacher is holding on his end of the wing there pretty well, but he's a little lonely. And anyway,
there were six voted for, him, three of them either left.
So I think this is the first bills in the session. Legislation will occur, at least the beginning of the process. So we can begin our work. We can't adopt anything until we get a quorum. We are doing three bills today. Can you hear me now?
No. No.
Are they on now?
I think we can now.
Okay. There. I'm going to not call us to order yet. We're close to a quorum. We have three bills up, the first bills of session. I'm glad so many of you turned out for this big day on our calendar. There'll be more bills to come. The first is a bill that has to do with dental lab regulation, and I think I'll let the author describe it, and then if you want me to piggyback with you about some of the elements that went on, I'm happy to help you with that. So Representative Kelly. And I can't move your bill to put it before us because we don't have a quorum yet. So, but
certainly.
When that time comes, I will. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Certainly appreciate your time this afternoon. And we will be, when we can, we will be working off the DE2 amendment. And I have Mr. Gary Yacko who will walk through this bill with us.
Welcome to the committee. Please say your name.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, representatives, my name is Gary Yacko, I-O-C-C-O. I own a small dental laboratory in Hastings, Minnesota. I'm also the current president of the Midwest Dental Laboratory Association and the treasurer for the National Association of Dental Laboratories. The bill in front of you is a compromise that we've been working on with Chairman Abler and the Minnesota Dental Association since last session ended last spring. Last session, the Senate passed Senate File 288. The Board of Dentistry, the Minnesota Dental Association, and our association were all in agreement with the bill. But sometimes, as you know, issues come up, and that's what happened with Senate File 288. Some think that the bill is too restrictive. Others think that it didn't go far enough. In discussions with Chairman Abler and the Minnesota Dental Association, we came up with this compromise, and it's a compromise that still protects the patient, the dentist, and all of our staff's safety. In discussion with Mr. Schrag from the Board of Dentistry, we understand that they cannot support this current bill, and we understand that. Of course, our association would prefer the original language in Senate File 288. We believe this is a very good compromise. It's a big step in the right direction of informing the dentist and the patient what material is going to be placed in their body and where it's made.
Mr. Eichel, let me just interrupt you. You can now be discussing in front of an official meeting. Come to order.
Thank you.
And actually, I'd like to move Senate File 288 to be before the committee, and I'd like to move the DE2 amendment. And I think we'll replace that, and so we can get it in order, we can talk about it in. So that's the topic. So any questions about that? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That amendment is adopted. The bill is now in order. So now we're talking about a real bill that's been amended. So welcome again to the committee in an official way, Mr. Eichel.
Thank you very much. As I've said, you know, it's a compromise, this bill. The bill will also allow a higher standard for laboratories that want to assume a higher standard more so than just a registration, a country of origin, and a product inclusion and what the materials are in the restoration, whether it's a crown or a bridge or a denture or implants. If there's a safety issue currently, we don't know where all the labs are located. We don't know how to notify all the labs if there's ever a product recall or a safety issue of any other sort. Now with this bill, the state would have that information with registration. We would appreciate any questions whatsoever. The bill basically provides two things. One, that the laboratory would register with the state where they're located, their name, physical address. Every lab in Minnesota would then have to supply a country of origin and a material content sheet to the doctor for the patient's files. There is another opportunity for dental labs that want to exceed minimum standards. It's called a certified dental laboratory, and there's more training involved, continuing education, but it would also be voluntary for the laboratory at that level. And thank you very much for your time. We would appreciate you passing this bill out of committee, and I'll stand for questions.
And members, this is a good time for questions. There are two testifiers, but this is the testimony about the content of the bill. So is it clear to members what has transpired between the reform committee and here? The certification has become voluntary. The registration is mandatory yet. In the bill, there's a one-time $20 fee to these labs, which would then get a number and have no continuing duties. And the dental board would have no duties either then except to update the addresses should people move. But at least for the first time, there's a list. On the certified level, there's a much higher standard. They have to meet one of three physical requirements, including national certification, which is in lieu of any state inspections. They just would show their certification of national certification. And they have to also maintain a full-time, is it full-time?
Full-time certified dental technician.
Dental technician. I think it's a really fair way to go about this enhancement to the dental lab systems in Minnesota. And then they have a fee up to $300, and the fees are subject to negotiation yet. And I have a feeling that maybe that'll get resolved on the way to Ways and Means on the fee part. So. No, we'll take this. And so the fiscal note, we'll balance the fiscal note by the way time it leaves Ways and Means. It can't leave Ways and Means unbalanced. It can leave here as a work in progress. Anyway, any questions about that, members? Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Having read through this, I think that it's, I'm not quite sure, but usually it's registration or certification or something else like that. This is an interesting way to do it, is to do both, registration required and certification with higher standards. It's kind of an interesting concept that because under certification, which is what I think it should be, there should be a higher standard. One, it's just we exist, and the other one says this is how good we are. And I think for a lot of people to get that certification, there should be a high standard. But it's an interesting approach that you have both, and often it's one or the other. And then we're always conflicted by trying to do both in one, you know, easy with certification. But so I kind of like the approach. I don't know if there's any other place in statute that we have done that.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of one. Mr. Spazzetto's coming down. He's nodding. Maybe he can come testify and tell us the one he remembers. I'll think of something, too. Anybody else have a question for the two witnesses that are here? Okay, Mr. Spazzetto, why don't you come down and offer your testimony, and then we'll hear from Mr. Schreg.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm Dominic Spazzetto. I'm here representing the Minnesota Dental Association. First of all, I'd like to thank Representative Kelly and Representative Abler for working with the Dental Association to address some of the concerns that we had with Senate File 288 in its previous form. Basically, in its previous form, it would have been a sort of a mandatory certification for everyone, and our concern was that we were going from no regulation at all to this level of certification, which would require continuing education and a variety of reviews and processes that would be unfamiliar to many of the dental labs in the state. We also had a concern relative to out-of-state dental labs. In exploring this legislation, I found out something I didn't know, that many dentists use more than one or two or three dental labs. They may choose one dental lab for, say, gold crowns. They may choose another dental lab for dentures. They may choose another dental lab for bridge work. Depending on their relationship with that lab and how much success that lab has had in meeting the fabrications under their work order. And sometimes those are out of state. I had an opportunity to talk to one of the dentists in Representative Kelly's district who uses labs in Colorado and Pennsylvania just for specific things, and it may be something that you only do two or three times a year. And our concern was that we didn't want to get into a situation where not only were we trying to register labs in the state, that we are trying to register all these other labs that may have relationships with dentists around the country. So that was one of our concerns, and that is addressed in this legislation. The primary issue related to the material content, I think, is a very important piece of information, because we have not really seen any cases of problems with materials, dental appliances or prosthetics in Minnesota. But we know that more and more materials are being constructed and fabricated overseas, and there could be concerns. So this is somewhat of what dentists like to call prevention. And you know dentists are very big on prevention. So this is sort of a prevention to give the dentist the ability to find out from the dental lab the country of origin in which this appliance was fabricated and the materials that are involved. So if something happens later, we will have that information in the patient record. So that is required for all the labs that are registered in Minnesota, all of the in-state labs, and those labs that we deal with out of state, it will be the requirement of the dentist to make sure they get that material content information from any lab that they work with, whether it's in Minnesota or outside the state. So we think we're handling the patient protection aspect of this as well. So having addressed those concerns and creating this basic statewide registry, which will provide basic information about the lab, where it's located, contact information, and who the owner and operator is, will give us a base to understand how many labs there are. And in the future, if we need to contact them, then we'll have that information available at the state. So with that, I would encourage you to support this legislation. Our concerns have been addressed, and we no longer oppose the legislation.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Sposetto, I appreciate your testimony, and especially that was my concern, was a dental association. One of the things in my district, I have a manufacturer who does medical parts, such as for orthopedic surgery. And so in their requirements on their product there that they use that eventually go into you for knee surgery or hip surgery or so on, they not only have to keep track of the part with a number, any of the any products that were used to make that part, they have to have a direct line between the raw product and it coming together, and they have to go so far back as to where did they get it out of the ground. I mean, very, very, very specific and a very strong. And so when you mention other countries, and especially in things that once it goes into your mouth, you generally don't see it, there's a real trust issue there, because you know, some of our knowledge before. So can you tell me a little bit about what the requirements, I see this on the certification of the dental labs, but do they have anything like that as far as the raw materials that go to make up their eventual product put in the mouth?
Mr. Sposetto.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure about that. Perhaps the lab association would have more information about that.
You want to hear from them?
If they are here, yes.
Oh, there he is, Mr. Elko. Mr. Elko, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kiffmeyer, we have to keep track of our lot numbers by FDA regulations, but the FDA does only regulates a dental laboratory if you are doing things like a sleep appliance, sleep apnea, snore guards type thing. That's a device, medical device two. We're to medical device one, but in our laboratory, we keep track of the material where we buy it, the lot numbers, what's included in there, and the bill will include anything that is going in the mouth. Now, we use other products such as stone or plaster to pour the impression so that it's in a positive form, but and that's all regulated also, but it's not going in the patient's mouth, so that will not have to be kept track of. But all the materials, whether it's porcelain, the glaze that's used, the metal that's used, are going in the mouth, especially for implants and things which are right in your jaw. Those are all, you have to keep those lot numbers just like any large medical device manufacturer.
Jefferson Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That answers my question. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, any questions for Mr. Sposetto? Okay, Mr. Schrag, welcome to the committee. Thank you for coming today.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Kelly, thank you also, and members of the committee. I'm Marshall Schrag. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Board of Dentistry. I come here, actually, it's rather uncomfortable to come here and not be speaking in support of this bill. This is a bill that the board had worked with the Minnesota Dental Lab Association and the Minnesota Dental Association with to come up with language, and was actually supportive of the language that went through the Senate. We have not been involved in the development of the language for the amendment, and it creates some significant differences comparing to what the board had agreed with at its board meeting when Mr. Yacko spoke to the board. The board is concerned. Its primary responsibility is protection of the public. The board saw that this was a beneficial objective program to be involved with, because we too were concerned about the materials that could potentially be going into patient mouths, and wanted to be sure that that there was documentation in patient records that would indicate, as you've heard, the origin of those materials as well as the material content list. The original language was inclusive, was comprehensive as far as the requirement for Minnesota dentists to utilize only regulated dental laboratories. And with the change in language to be more voluntary, it no longer provides the protections, or appears no longer to provide the protections that the board had had been in agreement with. We have redone the fiscal note upon request of the committee, and I don't know if you've got the draft fiscal note distributed here yet. According to the fiscal note that, and I've got some copies of the draft if you'd like to see those to review, but essentially when we looked at it previously, the revenues that would be generated from the number of labs that were involved did cover the costs in, to the board involved in doing this regulation. With assumptions that I've made based upon the amendment, those costs no longer are met, and in fact, the board would be subsidizing the program at about $65,000 a year. In speaking with the chair this morning, there's some opportunity for us to reevaluate those assumptions. We'd be glad to do that and continue to work with the, those involved with this proposal. But as it stands, the assumptions that we've made would be costly to the board, and we're not sure that they add any particular public value. The goal that was sought initially, we think, could be achieved simply by requiring dentists to obtain from dental labs those material content sheets, and to make sure that those are included in the dental record, and that we could do that without any additional bureaucratic development or burden, and at essentially no cost, as opposed to developing two types of regulation, the registration and the certification that are recommended in this amendment, and creating a system for regulating something that could be done without. So, again, we're willing to work with the parties involved, but aren't sure that we see the additional value and are concerned about the additional cost to the board at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Schrag, and I did talk to you this morning, and I think we need to, we'll have some more conversations between here in ways and means to help clarify what we expect the board to do and then not have to do. And whether the, I don't foresee a registry required. If you wanted to put one online, that'd be fine. No one is asking for that. We're just asking that they be given a number. And that was, I think, helpful to you not to have to program a registry and make it accessible. Although I'm surprised at what they charge boards for updates. I've talked to other boards, and my son, who's 13, is available to hire and would offer you a... They've set up websites that are incredibly complicated.
I'd be glad to take that contact.
$9.95 a month. So, anyway, I'm not meaning to belittle the value, and I'm just, this whole technology thing amazes me. And then on the other part, just to help understand that of the three physical requirements that the lab has to meet, one of those is a national certification, which you require no duty from the board except to make sure they really have certification. So I think that we can clarify that along the way. And I respect your concerns. You were brought in late, and I acknowledge that. And I'm nice to talk this morning, and we'll be talking along the way. Representative Kelly is a collaborative author, and he'll be eager to engage in those discussions as well. Any more discussions about this, members? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Strake, I wonder, you said this amendment takes out some protections that were in the bill previously. Could you just be really explicit about what those are?
Mr. Strake.
My understanding is that because this becomes voluntary on the part of the labs, that they do not need to be certified. Any lab that a dentist would use that's located in Minnesota would need to be registered with the board, but the registration is simply that. It's keeping a list of names. There's no background research or qualification, no enforcement of that at all. And the optional certification level is something that has some enforcement options available to it, but the enforcement is simply to revoke or decline a certification, but not to take any additional action. So the discussion earlier about the material content is certainly a concern, that what the bill did in its original language and continues to do in this language is require that the lab provide a note, a slip of what the material content is in the product, but there's no way for the board actually to evaluate or enforce that. So we're not sure that that there are really any teeth to this.
Representative Liebling. And just to comment on my end of it, I see this as the least restrictive regulation, and it's a start. Right now, no one knows how many there are. We think there's 400 or 500 labs across the state. The association has 120 members or something, and they pay a fee to be part of an association. The majority of the labs in the state are not even in communication with anybody. That was my concern about the bill originally, that they would be forced to be certified, which would have forced some out of business. And I see in Minnesota, we'd like to have good credentials in our state, coming from you come from in particular, but the both of us. And this is a way to kind of help people along that path. I see after a while they're going to want to be certified because it would be desirable, there'd be some benefit. But if they chose not to be, it's at least we know who they are and they can be at least contacted should further actions carry on. There may be a will 4 or 5 years from now that they all be certified, at least they can know. So is that helpful? But above all, so what we've done is we made the dentist, the licensed dentist, who was another high standard credentialed person subject to a board, the very executive director is here, and it's their duty now to make sure that these are properly in the patient file and that they're the right alloy and all that. So we're making the dentist police his own lab, which I think is a good start, which is what's gone on now in practical ways, that they trust the lab. So, Mr. Strag, did you want to comment anymore?
No.
I really appreciate you coming forward. Any more questions about this part? Okay, so there's I have an amendment that I'm going to offer, which is, what one is that? The A2 amendment? A2. And if Ms. Thacker Pate would come down. This was a topic that was addressed in the Reform Committee. This has to do with social workers and the changes that were made to that. And it's my intention, with the polite permission of the author of this bill, to piggyback this project, which we spent a long time on in the Reform Committee and great at length of testimony. It was in the omnibus, and that was vetoed by the governor, so it passed both houses in the form that's in the A2 amendment. It has to do with, and maybe I'll let Ms. Zachary Pate just clarify, but at this point, it's my understanding that all the parties that had a concern are content with this outcome, and that it really does a lot of good things for the social workers in terms of giving them a grandfathering option, as well as raising some standards that we thought were important to raise on this area of licensure. And so I talked to Representative Hosh and others, and I think he's comfortable. Anyway, so Ms. Thacker Pate, maybe just a short version of this, and if members have questions, and then you can describe also the amendment. Let me move the A2 amendment. And then also we'll be talking about the A3 amendment after that. So if you want to discuss both those content-wise. Thank you. Ms. Zachary Payne.
Thank you very much, Representative Ablers, and good afternoon, members of the committee. I am very pleased to be here to be moving this really important provision along. And the way that I might start is to describe a little bit what is in the A2 amendment. The A2 amendment really does include House File 1461. This file was heard and it was voted on affirmatively by this committee during the last session. The bill provisions in this amendment remained exactly the same as what you have already voted affirmatively on last session. This bill has bipartisan support, and if you remember, there was one controversial piece that was removed last session, and that was to remove any reference or impact on county agencies as that related to modifying the social work licensing exemptions. I might also mention that this bill has overwhelming support of the MAPE union, which represents the professional state social workers. Again, just generally, the overall goals of the bill are to increase public protection for consumers. And there are also two other provisions in this bill, which, quite frankly, I would characterize as housekeeping. Very quickly, the three provisions in the bill. In Section 5, what we included was a correction to include a temporary license provision for students who are graduating from programs in candidacy status that was inadvertently omitted when our statute was recodified back in 2009. Section 13 contains an alternate supervisor provision, which is intended to allow a little more flexibility to licensed social workers to meet supervised practice requirements, and also kind of aligns that provision with provisions that are available to other mental health professionals in Minnesota. Most importantly, Section 1 contains those modifications to the current social work licensing exemptions. And again, remember that the controversial portion of that has been removed. County agencies are no longer in this bill, and that has been met with a lot of satisfaction. It does, though, still include the modifications that this committee voted for, to include the changes for city, county, scratch that, I'm sorry, I'm so used to rolling them all together. Let me be clear again, it includes modifications only to city, state, and nonprofit agencies who have a primary service focus serving ethnic minority populations. And, you know, as Senator Abler, Representative Abler, sorry, has mentioned, this really has been seen as an opportunity by many social workers. This bill, as you see in this amendment, requires licensing only of individuals who use the title of social worker. And the A3 amendment offers a slight change to that, which I'll mention in a moment. And the other thing that I think is very important and was a great concern to this committee last session is that these provisions really do balance the regulation of professionals and the needs of the marketplace. The board tried very, very hard to be responsive. This bill does not displace workers. This bill does not fence out workers. Qualified individuals with other academic trainings are still able to be employed in social service capacities, provided that they don't use the title of social workers, and employers can still retain and hire those individuals as well. These licensing requirements apply prospectively, which I think is also very important. So again, they apply only to new hires as of 2016. And quite frankly, too, I really think that this is an opportunity to help build a more diverse workforce, which is really, really essential at this point in Minnesota. So that's what's included in the A2 amendment. A3 amendment, again, the whole reason for bringing this one forward, again, is that with the amendments that we had to make to the original bill to satisfy the controversy and the concerns, you know, brought forward by county agencies, the requirement to be licensed if you have a social work degree and you engage in social work practice and that's sort of the basis of your job, that was removed as well based on the county concerns. And the A3 amendment is bringing forward putting that back into this bill so that ultimately this would require that individuals who are using the title of social worker and also individuals who have that social work training, the social work degree, and that's the basis for their job in social work, would also need to be licensed. Now, what's very, very important about introducing this as a change is that this is a way to ensure consistent public policy. Would be the same rules would apply across the board to everyone who is practicing, and it would align this new change to the Board Social Work Practice Act with what is already in statute. The need to be licensed if you're using the title and if you are practicing based on the degree. Again, according to the board's primary mission, this increases consumer protections because more individuals would in fact be licensed in the social work arena. And also really importantly, it keeps the public and employers and professionals from being confused about who needs to be licensed and in what situations. And lastly, it really does help create efficiencies in the board's ability to implement these standards in our Social Work Practice Act and in helping to enforce standards in the professional social work community. It does not create this dual track system. So with that said, I would certainly welcome any questions that you have. I appreciate the opportunity to present this and really hope that the committee is able and willing to support these amendments. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Any questions from members? Liebling, Representative.
Thank you, Abler.
Sorry.
Mr. Chair, really the question is more for you. I'm just wondering, why are we doing this as an amendment? Yeah. I mean, I do remember that we talked about this, and obviously it's an important issue, and but why attach it to this other bill? They don't seem to be very similar to me, and what would be the downside of just doing this separately? I'm just really concerned that we're really confusing two things, and one is not worked out yet, and even if the other one is, why are we doing it this way?
Well, it's a fair question. The point of this second piece is this one's quite worked out, and I believe there's no controversy in this. It's really quite important, and given the nature of this body, I've been here 14 years, you've been here pretty long, it's nice to get some work done on behalf of a group that's really done their homework, and you rescue certain pieces, and that's the totally intent. I don't know what will happen with other bills. This was carried in the omnibus. It wasn't picked up in the follow-up bills. It was done in an omnibus in an effort to get it done and get this good grandfathering program in and deal with this matter, which I think is really quite important for quality and for access for minorities and others to get these services out there. That's my interest in it. It's just a white hat project on another project, so that's all. And it's just a method to get a bill done, so you can react to that.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess my reaction is, you're in the majority, you're the chair of the committee, I don't know why you don't just take the language, put it in a bill, and it would make it so much cleaner and easier for all of us, and if it's not controversial, it should just sail right through. But I don't know, I think attaching it to this other bill that may be, in fact, controversial, it obviously still is controversial, I think is a problem. I mean, I don't understand that way of doing things, and, I could see, obviously that has to happen sometimes when we're, approaching deadlines or beyond deadlines or something, but, I don't see the downside to just doing it as a bill.
Well, it's a fair question. I don't have a better answer for it than the one I gave you. I'm just trying to get some good stuff done. A lot of good ideas wind up on the floor here that should have become law. And I have a sense that redistricting maps come out kind of soon, and then we're going to be distracted, and who knows if there's a deficit at the end of February. And that's there's a ship sailing with room in the hold for one more project. And so, you know, that's the only reason for it. So, Representative Lane, or Representative Hosh, do you want to react?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to also comment that I would, you know, I appreciate having the discussion here in committee instead of trying to find a vehicle on the floor and trying to do the same thing on the floor. I think this is a more appropriate place, and we have had an airing on this legislation, and I support your efforts on this and try to move the non-controversial items forward, and it's better to do it in committee rather than the floor.
Yeah, Representative Lane.
Well, besides that question, because I thought it was about dental lab regulation, so that when it comes in a whole thick bill on something else, for me, it was confusing. I thought we were going to talk dental lab regulation. So it's a surprise, and I wonder why you do it that way, because the bill should be clear as to what we're talking about. And if it's just a functionary little side thing, it doesn't sound small to me. It sounds big. But that's already been talked about. So what I wanted to just ask is, I see it's anyone who's employed on city or state agency, and you said something about county, and I think I missed that. So it doesn't apply, for instance, to Hennepin County social workers, because that's a situation where I know that it's an extremely difficult job, extremely hard to get and keep people, because it's an extremely difficult job with not enough time to do the job you're given to do. To add to it that you'd have to be particularly licensed a particular way to have that job is disconcerting.
Ms. Zacherbank.
Thank you, Representative Abler, and members of the committee. Again, just to be very, very clear, the provisions in this bill do not apply whatsoever to any or all of the county social service agencies in Minnesota at this point in time. No changes.
Representative Slawin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a question. So I have a couple licensing bills that I haven't been able to get a hearing on. So one is for music therapists, and then there's another one for, that's not my bill yet, but they're talking about genetic counseling. So is there, there's no, obviously, we used to have a subcommittee on licensing, right? So is that, did that just not meet this year? Or, I guess, Representative Kelly, I guess it's open to germane amendments on the floor.
Those are a couple of questions. Let me, if the question is process, people ask that question. Obviously, I haven't been on a Ways and Means Committee in the last few years. I had a headache once. I went home early. I was watching Ways and Means on TV, which shows I have no life. and on some bill on under even a different administration with a different chair who whose name rhymes with Sun, was people brought in bills on any topic under the sun. Not meant to be a joke there. Things that were irrelevant to the topic at hand. In a committee, anything is germane within reason. We talked about germaneness rulings early in last year. I talked about that. But in committees, it's what the committee accepts as germaneness to be germane. And so the custom usage of the House, especially in Ways and Means, has become whatever you can get a vote for to stick on a bill. The two topics you brought up, Rex and Slavik, have not been heard and vetted thoroughly. And it would be inappropriate to bring those here. And if you want to vote no, you may all vote no. I'm just trying to rescue this good project because I don't know the future. And I just think this is a really good project. And so I've tried to work out in the open here with people. And if you're uncomfortable, then vote no on the amendment to adopt it. But if you brought your music amendment forward, it would be inappropriate in this committee because it's a policy function that we've not vetted well. If you bring it on the floor, then you can question germaneness. The bill would be germane toward dental labs and social workers. At least they're licensed professional people. That's, you know, it's not the electricity bill or something. So,
Mr. Chair,
I don't want to spend all day on this. I just
no.
And I respect your question.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, this is that we're frustrated because I can't get a hearing on a bill, and it is music therapy is really actually a really important thing to get licensed. So
that's a different chairman, though. Just to tell you, it's not going to come to my committee probably anyway. But and I have some bills I want to get heard there too, which I'm bottlenecked on. Anyway, so I can't help you with that. I'm not trying to be heavy-handed. I'm just trying to bring an opportunity to solve a problem. Any more questions about that? Ms. Zacherbank.
Yes, Representative Abler, if I might, and I apologize for this. In reviewing the bill upon arrival here today, I did notice that there are four dates in the bill that should that are written as 2012 and should be 2011. So may I be able to point those out to Ms. Aves, please? And
well, let's do this.
Make those let me, corrections.
Let me. Can we just so the everybody understands the A3 amendment? Mm-hmm. Is anybody going to testify about that? Oh, I do. Oh, hello. Oh, sorry, false alarm. Thank you for. Anyway, so let's do this. Let's get the amendment in order, and then you can vote if you want it to go on here or not. And I'll love you the same, however you vote. So this is not any popularity contest. All right. Although whatever. So anyway, so Ms. Aves, you need to make an oral amendment to change for 2012 to 2011. Do you know what those are? Or should we fix those on the way to Ways and Means if this goes on?
Next round.
Okay. So we're not going to do that now. That's technical, and we'll fix
Thank
it later.
You.
So the vote now will be to adopt Amendment A3 to make it a... Yeah, I think we're going to get the amendment in order, then we're going to see if we want to put it on the bill or not. So we're going to get the amendment clean. All right, so I'm going to move the A3 amendment, which modifies the A2 amendment, which... Right. That is, we can amend it. You can't have an amendment to an amendment to an amendment. So I'm going to move the A3 amendment. Everybody understands what we're doing, just the language about this technical thing that Ms. Zachary said. Okay, so all in favor of that, easy vote, please say aye.
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 Thanks. Opposed? Now we're getting somewhere. Mm-hmm. Okay, any more questions about the idea about attaching these bills together? Anybody from the audience want to testify about that? No one dares. Okay. So all in favor of the A2 amendment as amended being on the Kelly bill, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
I believe the ayes have it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, and I respect that. Any further discussion to this bill? Representative Kelly, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Certainly, if I could. And as we discussed going in, as far as the association and the licensing on the bill and the amendment, as we agreed, it did tie in because of these licensing requirements we were talking about, and I certainly appreciate that. And appreciate the committee's time, even though it may have seemed, as Representative Liebling said, that it seemed still controversial. I think the reason why Mr. Tragg testified was because initially he thought our first bill went far enough, and now we don't go quite far enough. But Representative Kiffmeyer, as you noted, you know, this might be a little different way of doing things, where we're first requiring registration, and we're hoping that these dental labs will go towards certification. We want the market to try and work this out as well, and we believe that they will, because this is a public safety issue. And as this goes, we do hope that that's our goal, is that all the labs will strive to become certified. So I appreciate your time with this, and I would certainly appreciate your support.
And we have to vote the bill out of here now. So any further questions to the bill as amended? So the motion is that it be sent to be approved, recommended to pass, and be re-referred to Ways and Means. To pass as amended. The bill be recommended to pass as amended and be re-referred to Ways and Means. Representative Lane.
All right, I was just looking at something else and thinking, is the reason that you're doing this in order to get it passed, as you said, the easy way, because it's the dental lab one passed the Senate, and now you'll have the same bill with two different versions, but you can then reconcile it in conference committee? Is that how you get it passed?
This bill is a Senate file. That's a good question. It's a Senate file. The Senate will have two choices. They can concur with the changes the House has made. We're working on that. Or the Senate can choose to have a conference committee and reconcile their version.
So that's the reason why it worked faster this way.
This is an opportune. I forgot that part. That's a good point. It's helpful to understand this, and I think for the freshmen. There's a lot of good ideas you came to pass that are going to get one hearing in one body, and it will be like a tree falling in a forest with nobody being there. So anyway, it's been a good, productive session here. Maybe our ratings will improve if we have more meetings like this. Any further discussion to the bill? If Epson Kelly wants to get out of here and do something else, all in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
So the motion prevails. The bill is recommended. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Okay, now we have some minutes to pick up here. And so we'll, if Representative Banyan is here and Representative Hosh, you're part of a bill like this as well. This is the FAME bill. You can sit where you are if you like. While they're coming, we have some minutes to do, and Representative Liebling, this is not any payback, but which one is the one? February 14th Amendment. You recommend we approve minutes that have Representative Hayden's name on them, and I'm just astonished. And so I like him a lot, but he doesn't get to be president, so we had to rewrite them. And so you may want to recommend that we replace this with that. So,
Mr. Chair, you mean you want me to move to take Representative Hayden's name off the minutes? My good friend, Representative Hayden?
I know. Well, we can vote on that. We could vote to leave them in.
Okay, I'll make that motion, but you owe me.
And then, so all in favor of the no Hayden version and a date change, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. That's adopted. It was all.
No.
So aloha, Representative, now Senator Hayden. And then there's anybody dare to approve the minutes of the 15th? Representative Liebling is on a roll here, so
yeah.
Representative Liebling moves the minutes. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. There you go. We do miss him being here. So, anyway, we got Russell Lockwood instead. So. Okay. And Representative Hosh, you might want to move King Banyan's bill then, which is Senate House File 2062.
I will move House File 2062. Will that be to the General Register, Mr. Chair?
Ways and Means.
To Ways and Means.
Oh, it's being held over. Being held over for possible inclusion.
Oh, okay. I just recommend
I'm sorry.
That we include it when we do the possible inclusions.
Okay. Before he makes his speech, let me just set up the bill first here. Representative Hosh has a bill which is much shorter, and Representative Banyan has the longer version. So maybe there's something who can be more succinct. But anyway, so Representative Hosh wins the succinctness award. But they're on the same topic, and I passed out something. We're doing the Banyan bill, yes. We're doing 2062.
Oh. We're doing ours?
But we're just making note as a similar bill by an author on this committee, which happens to be House File 1096. So you have friends in the committee.
I had no idea. Well, I've had friends on this committee anyway.
Yeah.
Before this.
But I also want to point out, members, we're going to hear some bills to spend money. And I, out of respect for the content, it's a pretty narrow sieve we put some of the money bills through. And the ones that have, ones that I think people will like and that are small denominations. But I wanted to point out to you, I handed out to the members the February 10th fiscal update. Maybe you want to give King Banyan one too. But we've been clicking along with our forecast being up by, I think, $50 million or something last time. This time we were down $107 million. Mostly in income tax collections. We're a little up on sales tax. It's a push on corporate and other revenues down slightly. And so I don't know if we're going to have a surplus or a deficit. I know we're not going to have any big budget to spend here, but I wanted to at least show some things that we like, that we'd like try to do something with if it's possible. And there'll be a couple bills. There's another bill coming up today and one next week. And so I just gave you this for your information just to give context why I'm hearing bills to spend money. Representative Slawick.
So, Mr. Chair, as you're holding them over, are you sort of potentially building an omnibus bill? Is that's typically how we would do it?
Fair question. I plan to have an omnibus bill. We have some problems we have to solve. The corporate foster beds, the closures, EMA, maybe MAEPD if we can get that put together. Some of those kind of things. And we're talking to the Senate about what they want to do, but I think we have a responsibility to address some things that have come up and some issues from the last bill that were not as good as we thought they were. So that's my intention as this chair. And so we'll be building an omnibus is my intention. So this is possible stuff. And the more we can, if our target is zero, which would be kind of good news looming this, pending this, we have to find our own money.
to better ways to do business, you know, and so on, helping tail savings happen, et cetera. So we're still in this together. So this is an incentive to do some of these nice things, I guess.
Mr. Chair, it's
so
we'll follow the finance deadlines, and our bill will be out of this committee by March 30th.
Yeah,
is that the
at least by then.
At least by then.
I can do it sooner. I'd like it, but I don't know if that's possible. So we're bound by deadlines. Is everybody clear about that part, that we're still doing finance work? And okay. I have my fiscal disclaimer on the $107 million deficit. Variances should always be interpreted with great caution, since some revenue variances may reflect differences in the timing of receipts. That's the lawyer label. So so we don't know, but it's the forecast will come out on the 29th, and we'll be bound by that. So I'm just cautioning people. This is our first spending bill I'm taking up. I wanted to make it clear that I understand the math.
No, I'm trying to delay this. My interpretation of what you said, maybe I interpreted it wrong, was if we can't find the money, so there'll be a supplemental budget if there's money. The governor will have one, too. And if there isn't money, that we potentially pay with it through cuts? Is that what I heard you say?
I don't want to do any cuts. I'm not saying more than that. We have to find our own money, better ways of doing business, economies of scale, more reform. I'm working on some ideas you'll start to hear next week. Hope there'll be money tied to those. And say that without hurting anybody or causing any challenges in the system.
Right, interesting.
We're not out of the woods. Representative Kiesmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Slavik, I heard you mention the governor might have a bill. Is that been introduced or is that somewhere?
Representative Slaughter.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiesmeyer. Typically, when we have our February forecast, if there is extra money, the governor, any governor that's in charge, mm-hmm. will at that time introduce a supplemental budget.
Okay.
I have heard it mentioned, but that just means, obviously, it would have to be positive. You know, there would have to be a surplus to have a budget around.
Or some efficiencies, maybe.
Okay, well, anyway. Welcome to the committee, Representative Banyan. This is actually you're the first spending bill of the session, and one of only a very few. So, you're in a very special category.
Well, I feel quite honored, and thank you, Chair Ebler. Thank you, committee members. For many of you who have been with the legislature before this session, this is a program that you're probably familiar with. I first became familiar with it during a board meeting of the United Way of Central Minnesota when someone who will be speaking to you a little bit later here is made a presentation of a program that basically encouraged families that were struggling, families that were trying to learn how to develop themselves, gain financial independence, could go through a program in which they could save money, have that money met with what effectively is a pretty high interest rate, much better than you can get on your savings account right now, and then use that money to help them establish financial independence through finding a job, helping them start a business, helping them find a home, helping them with finding additional education. I have with me Pam Johnson from Minnesota CAP to talk about that, and I'm going to let them tell the story because it's a great story, and we'll also then hear from Patrick who introduced me to the program at that United Way meeting, and then I think we also have someone that's been a recipient who's benefited from this program, and I think we're allowed to call them graduates. I thank you for the opportunity to let my three testifiers speak. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Great. Yes. Good afternoon, Chairman Ebler and members. My name is Pam Johnson, and I work with the statewide Minnesota Community Action Partnership. Many of you might know your community action agency through Head Start or Home Heating Assistance or Flood Relief or many other locally designed programs. We're thankful today to have the opportunity to talk about the Family Assets for Independence in Minnesota program, or FAME, which has a powerful and a lasting impact on the lives of thousands of Minnesotans and their communities over this past decade that it's been in operation. As Representative Banyan mentioned, FAME provides financial education and matched savings accounts for low-income households to acquire a long-term financial asset, either a home, a college education, or to start a small business. The participants deposit their earned income into individual development accounts, or IDAs, and those are matched by state and federal funds. All account holders complete 12 hours of financial education and address any credit or debt issues that they might have, and they work one-on-one with a coach that you're going to hear from shortly to prepare for that asset purchase. This is a statewide multi-partner collaborative, and it's comprised of Bremer Banks, City County Federal Credit Union, Greater Twin Cities United Way, Leech Lake Tribal Government, Emerge Community Development, and, of course, community action agencies. Nearly 1,700 assets have been purchased over the last decade, and 3,000 people have completed the financial education courses. We all know that long-term assets help us to weather life's financial storms and move us beyond paycheck-to-paycheck living. The financial know-how gained through coaching and classes provides people with savvy decision-making skills, and they pass that on to the next generation, to their kids. Your packet that you have today has a set of materials that introduce the return on investment aspect of FAME. And the asset, we describe how FAME asset purchases boost local economies through increased home ownership, property taxes, enhanced professional skills through the college education, expanded small business purchases in the local communities, and of course new jobs are created. A recent survey, and you've got this in your packet, that we conducted, uncovered the following remarkable finding, that nearly 90% of FAME graduates who launched small businesses were still in operation after more than 2 years, and that's compared to a national average of 44% of new small businesses that were launched. We think this exciting outcome may be due to the one-to-one coaching and support that all FAME participants received. The report goes on to talk about how 65% of these owners increased their sales and income after using their FAME funding to make improvements to their business, and 22% of the business owners boosted their local job creation by adding at least one new employee to their business. Another piece that you have in your packet is a very brief overview of a home retention study that we worked on with the University of Minnesota. And that shows that 94% of FAME homeowners improve their economic well-being, even in these tough financial times, through either keeping their home through home retention or a net gain home resale. Among the countless FAME success stories, and we included a few in your packet here, the goldenrod piece, there's a common link among the stories, and that's the power of the coaching and financial education. And, of course, we're here today, as Representative Banyan stated, due to last year's difficult budget balancing session that led to the elimination of the $250,000 per year FAME appropriation, triggering the loss of one-to-one federal matching dollars as well, and severely hampering the access to service for Minnesotans seeking to obtain greater financial stability. So now I'd like to introduce Patrick Shepard, who's an expert FAME coach for us through TRICAP Community Action St. Cloud, and we'll have Martha Varela come up as well. She's one of our successful FAME business owners. Thank you.
Welcome, Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Patrick Shepard. I live in St. Cloud, and I work at Tri-County Action Program, or TRICAP. I'm pleased to be here today representing the FAME program, a program which I've been affiliated with for over 8 years. The passion that I have for this program comes from seeing it work firsthand. TRICAP has served over 200 low-income people in the FAME program during my time there in the 8 years. These participants, many of them coming to me with savings accounts at $0, have saved $160,000 over the 2 years in the program. So the 200 people with very little savings, $160,000 they've saved. These successes are for participants that live and work in the central Minnesota, but similar success stories can be told across the state of Minnesota. We are teaching low-income wage earners it is important to save money. It is important to have a relationship with the bank, and it is important to work your way out of poverty. The beauty of the FAME program is that it provides financial coaching, education, mentoring, whatever word you'd like to use, to the 3-to-1 match savings, and then the asset acquisition. Dr. Shradden from the Washington University in St. Louis found that the best way to lift people out of poverty is the acquisition of an asset. Many past participants have stated to me that the 3-to-1 match was great, that they couldn't have gone to school, bought a home, or started a business without it. But really, the most valuable part of the program was the financial coaching they received. The financial coaching helps manage difficult times that our participants encounter. In addition, the financial coaching holds the participant responsible for their own financial future and helps lead them to self-sufficiency, ending their participation in government programs. Every participant in the program gets 12 hours of financial education through a class, and in addition to that, they get 10 hours of education in the asset that they pick. That's 22 hours of specific training. In addition to that, each participant gets monthly coaching through the Financial Fame Coach to assist them as they progress towards their self-sufficiency. Often these conversations turn into a question of, Patrick, I'm calling you because I think I want to do this, and you taught us about that in the class, and I think this is the right decision. Their confidence increases as they progress through the program, whereas at the beginning of the program, they have no clue how to make that decision. I'd like to leave you with the story about one of my past participants. She was a single mother who entered the program because she wanted to show her daughter that a single mother could make it without government assistance. She saved money, went to school, and graduated from the sonography program at St. Cloud Technical College. She has a job, paying income taxes, purchased a home, paying property taxes, is spending money in the community, paying sales tax and purchasing from local merchants. In addition, she's teaching her daughter financial skills that she will carry with her into adulthood. The state funding contributed to help this person with her education will be more than returned as she continues to contribute to our economy. Thank you for your time, and I'm going to turn it to Martha.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman Abler and members of the committee. My name is Martha Varela, and I am a 2011 graduate of the FAME program. I signed up for the FAME program in 2007, shortly after I had experienced a series of layoffs with various nonprofits that I had worked for in the Twin Cities metro area, the last being in 2011 when I was laid off as being the director of the Westside Safe Neighborhood Council in St. Paul. The one-on-one coaching that I received from the FAME program coach was invaluable in helping me create a plan for my future. The personal relationship that I had built with my FAME coach was instrumental in helping me access the much-needed resources that I had needed during this time of great financial distress. It took me a little over 3 years to complete all of the required business classes and saving the goal that we were asked to save. And in June of last year, I opened Martha's Closet, a discount clothing boutique in West St. Paul, Minnesota, that provides new name brand clothing and merchandise at discount prices to families in need. The program has greatly impacted me and my family in many ways. My older son has learned firsthand what it's like to overcome great obstacles and challenges, like being laid off from work, losing your job during this tough time in the economy. My younger son has learned more about the day-to-day operations of the business and takes great pride and joy in helping me open up the store and greets customers on a day-to-day basis. I am very thankful for this opportunity that FAME has provided me, and I hope that the members of the committee will consider continuing funding for this great program. It has helped me achieve one of my greatest goals, opening a new business and becoming a new business owner in the city that I live in. Thank you so much for allowing me the time to share my story.
Well, thank you for coming, Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to close, and I did not realize that Representative Hosh had a similar bill. My guess is we both know of a coffee shop over in Avon that was created, I believe, by someone that went through is a graduate of the FAME program. I could tell you that last Sunday I walked to another coffee shop in St. Cloud, And just as I walked in, someone came up to me and said, are you King Banyan? Yes, I am. I want you to know I'm a graduate of the FAME program. I bought a house 3 blocks away from where my parents raised our family, and I now have my 3 children in this home. I've been in the home for 2 years. My payments are current. And I tell you what, that was a great cup of coffee. I'll tell you that. So I will leave you with that. Stand for questions. If there are questions, particularly about the program, I've got the backstop here behind me. I will indicate that in Section 3 of the bill is an appropriation. It asks you to restore the $250,000 per year in our desire to reduce spending last year, we decided not to have in the bill that we passed last year. So I'd like you to consider, if there is a supplemental budget, turns out there's a little more than we thought before, that this would be a priority in what you decide to restore.
Well, thanks. And just for members' knowledge, the bill that left the House left this program intact. So, and
I'm sorry,
I tried. No, it was quite a process. So, Representative Loeffler. We have about 5 minutes for
sure.
This.
So, thank you, Mr. Yeah. Chair, and I don't know if this is to staff or Representative Banyan, but I'm wondering, since we discontinued the program, or it was in the July shutdown resolution discontinued, if there's some transition planning that we need to do for people who actually were in the program and had plans going on, and if they shouldn't be somehow addressed, as opposed to just, you know, restarting the program like it had never existed before. And you know, since we're not going to be acting on this in final form, I'm just wondering though if there's some transition issues we need to address, because clearly the program was serving people who were partway towards achieving their goal, and I'm wondering if we might want to do some special outreach to them.
Ms. Johnson.
Yeah. Chairman Abler, Representative Loeffler, actually there's no concern for the folks that are currently in the program. We're able to close all of them out successfully. That's a great question, because that was our initial concern as well, but the funding that we have does help us conclude the folks that are already enrolled in the program. We're concerned about not being able to continue the program, to continue people to keep having this opportunity. But thank you for that question.
And just one follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Loeffler.
And
can't see you back there.
Oh, sorry. We've got a big committee and big chairs. The other thing that, just before we bring it back, I'd love to better understand, if we're able to squeeze money out for this, you know, what the impact is of taking it from TANF versus general fund, which I think was the funding source for Representative Hosh's bill, and just the trade-offs as we go forward.
Well, I think that's an opportunity for creativity on the part of the committee. And I think what we're seeing in this program is an example, I think, where they really make the money go pretty far that they get. And I think that's the era that we're in. And so what would we rather do instead of something? And what would go further elsewhere? And how do you stretch TANF value? And those are all good questions. Representative Slawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Banyan, great bill. Representative Hosh, great bill. This is a great concept. It's been around for a long time, actually, and has done a lot of good things. So I'm really glad that you're bringing it forward. I also had a question about the TANF funding. Is that an allowable use of TANF funds to provide the match?
Ms. Nell,
we know.
Who would, Mr. Berg, you know that?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure of that. I think this is how it was funded previously. Is that correct?
Okay.
And so I'm assuming
so
the answer is yes.
I believe it was.
Sounds like yes, Representative.
Thank you. I'm just looking at the trade-offs between, because TANF is used for an array of low-income needs, and hopefully we can see exactly how much money that would be and how to weigh that. So,
okay.
But good bill.
And is there somebody from the department that wants to comment about that? Just, that's kind of a good question. Maybe, I'm not sure if they're here today. There's nobody here today. Okay. Oh, here. We got a volunteer. Phone a friend. Thanks for coming. So now you know it was good you came. So you get to comment. Welcome.
Yes. Hello, Mr. Chair and Committee. I'm Joelle Haft. I work with the Department of Human Services, and we manage the state funding for the FAME program since its inception in 1999. And we've only ever had general fund money for FAME. When the original legislation was crafted back in the late 90s, it was meant to be a permissive thing. And as programs around the nation have funded IDAs, some have drawn on, I think it was TANF reserve money early on in sort of the late 90s. But Minnesota's only ever had state general fund money for this program.
But we could use TANF, should we choose? Is that permissible?
My understanding is it's permissible. It's according to the federal law, it is permissible, and it's been done in other states. But as TANF reserve funds have, you know, kind of gone away, I don't think many people are using that mechanism to fund it any longer.
And we have no reserve anymore, is that right?
And I can't speak to that. I see somebody nodding. But
down to zero. Any questions for Representative Slavik? Is that good enough?
Well, I think that so that we haven't used it before, and that's what the TANF reserves used to be quite big, and we do a lot of different things with them. Like,
there's a lot of reserves are lower than they used to be.
Yeah, so that's unfortunate that we don't have that money.
Financing in the last bill.
Right.
Okay. It changes every forecast. At the end of last year, I think it was with the refinancing, I think we went close.
Representative Lanning, you might get the last question. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to make all of you aware, especially newer members of the committee. Our chair, Representative Abler, carried a bill several years ago to establish a legislative commission to study the issue of poverty and how we could eliminate poverty by the year 2020. And as Representative Slawick and Representative Hosh, Representative Fritz, and I all know who have been involved in this, as we studied that issue, I was a member of the commission, we found this as one of the programs that was really a star out there in terms of making a difference in people's lives. And so the commission acknowledged that this was one of those programs that had the kind of outcomes we really wanted to see and very much supported it. So, as you can see, I'm a co-author on this. Thank you, Representative Banyan, for carrying it. I also want to remind the members of the committee that last year our committee, in our final bill, also passed what's called the Ladders Out of Poverty Bill, where we had three additional programs that we highlighted that we provided almost another $1 million in funding, and it was passed the House, and unfortunately the Senate didn't do so, and so that died. Members, this is the kind of thing that we really need to do to help make a difference in helping people work their way out of poverty.
Well said, thank you. I think with that, cool. Our head Representative Banyan, people like your bill, and if we can pay for it, we'd be pretty happy about that. So thank you for coming, and thank you for the testifiers. Congratulations.
You're welcome, thank you.
And everybody thank shop you at Martha's. What's the name of your store again?
Martha's Closet, 940 South Robert Street, in West St. Paul.
There you go.
Back by 1:00.
So the bill is held over. And now... Now, Representative Morrow is here, and Representative Paymar as well. Is he still here? Did he have to? Okay. Do you want to join him down there? And do you want to move it? Representative Hosh, do you want to move the bill? Or? Do you want to move the bill? We just want to make the motion to bring the bill before us. So it's... Right. Do you want to move the bill to be to get before? Otherwise, I'll do it. Somebody has to move the bill. It's just too controversial of a thing. We all want to move it. I'll move the bill. And there's two bills. One is before us. One is in the packet again. And again, this is an example of things that we would like to do, or at least I would like to do, and the committee will decide later. But what bill did I move? House File 1014 for a possible inclusion. So, Representative Morrow, it's your bill. Mm-hmm. So you get to go first if you want. Representative Paymar, if you want. Representative Paymar can speak up or whatever you want to present. The rest of the time is yours. Oh, no, the DE. Representative Hosh moves the DE one bill, one amendment. Do you want to describe it for us, Representative Hosh, or do you want to?
Mr. Chair, I've had past opportunities to describe this amendment. I will
okay. Representative Morrow, do you want to describe the amendment for us, please?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members. Thank you, Representative Hosh. I'll be relatively brief. I'd like to turn to Ann Henry to describe the details of the bill. Members, I came to know about this situation on the medical assistance employed persons with disabilities because a constituent of mine with ALS found himself in the very position that some of our testifiers found themselves. When they turned 65, working on the 65th birthday or beyond imposed a tremendous financial burden upon them. And so the bill before you is very similar to a bill that Representative Hosh had, I believe, in 2007, that Senator Sharon and I have introduced in the past, and it was heard in the Senate. We do have a fiscal note that we'll get to at some point, but what we're essentially attempting to do here is to allow folks who've been working under the MAEPD program to continue working and not lose their assets. We'll talk about the spousal situation as well, and also to request a waiver from the federal government. But with that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn to Ms. Henry to describe how this bill under the DE amendment would work.
Representative Paymar, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be real brief. I don't think I've actually testified before your committee before.
Nice to have you here.
Committee one time.
Maybe you could join us for next session.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I know that you have a difficult budget to deal with this year, and I just want to say that I'm here, and why I would like you to consider this bill that's been discussed before is one of the testifiers is a constituent of mine who came to my office in I think in November of 2011 and shared his story with me, and it broke my heart, and my staff tried to talk to folks at the department and the Board of Aging to see if there was some solution for my constituent, and we found out that there wasn't any. The only fix would be legislatively, and that's when I found out subsequently that Representative Morrow and Representative Hosh and others had tried legislatively to fix this problem over the years. But my constituent has much more compelling testimony than I do. But the sad fact is if we don't fix this, someone who worked hard and played by the rules all his life is now going to be forced to, if we don't make this change, sell his condo, become impoverished, and in all likelihood, could end up in a nursing home when he's totally capable with this minor change to be self-sufficient. And to me, when the government can offer a little help, and that's all he and others are asking, I think we're doing the right thing. So, Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I know you have a difficult time ahead of you, but I hope you will consider this.
Nice to have you here. Ms. Henry, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
You can describe the DE amendment to us. Is that your plan?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
My name is Ann Henry, and I'm with the Minnesota Disability Law Center at the Legal Aid Society. In describing the delete all amendment to House File 1014, Representative Morrow's bill, I'll just give a quick section by section overview, and if you have questions, I can go into more detail. The first section just provides a needed cross reference to the second section, which is medical assistance provision on eligibility requirements for assets. And that gets to the bottom of page 2, clause 6, which is one of the key parts of the bill. The bill really does two important things, and this is the first one. This language would allow people who work under MAEPD before age 65 and save money, as they're encouraged to do on the program, to carry those funds, the assets, over after age 65. Without this language, people have to spend the savings that they've accumulated while working down right away in a month when they hit age 65. So this would disregard, basically, in medical assistance lingo, those assets. So that's what that section does. Section 3 is requiring the Department of Human Services to seek federal approval to allow this program to be in effect for people over age 65. Because right now, federal law that we use for our authority, the Ticket to Work Act, ends the program at age 65. And so this seeks to have the department ask to continue it and make the case that this really is a wise thing to do and would save money. And there are some technical things about birthdays and years and numbers of months that I won't go into right now. And Section 4, again, basically implements that, holding people who turn 65 this year
harmless. In other words, letting them stay where they are while the waiver request is pending, so they don't lose everything, and then we get the waiver and they don't have anything to use to maintain their independence. And Section 5 is requesting that as we ask for this federal authority, we use a broad analysis of the cost of this, because there are many programs that people have to go to after we take away their assets and income to survive, and we never get to really look at those costs. So it's seeking to try to analyze that. So I'd answer any questions, and then I have a little overview I'd like to give.
Well, thanks. So let's any questions about the amendment? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to make sure that I understand this. And so we're disregarding their assets for eligibility, but are we in any way requiring or guiding the use of those assets for other care needs after that point? I mean, I think part of the purpose of people having assets is to make sure that they can meet their needs and co-pays and things like that. But, I mean, is there any expectation that those assets would be used for those purposes, or is it just free and not addressed?
Ms. Henry.
Mr. Chair and Representative Loeffler, we don't control what people do, but they have been independent to that point, and you'll hear from the people that we're talking about. We're not talking about a lot of assets. In fact, most people on the program haven't been able to really save, but people have homes. We've had people, for instance, who have lost their home, not been able to keep up their accessible vehicle because they don't have the money to do it. And by having these assets and being able to continue on, they aren't going to be able to get other help to do those things. So they're going to have to either maintain themselves in an independent way, or they're going to have to revert to impoverishment.
Representative Loeffler.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions to the amendment? I think we'll act on that, and then we can take your comments and then testimony on the departments here. I want to ask them a few questions about this as well. So all in favor of the DE-1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? It's adopted. Ms. Henry, you have the floor.
Thank you. In just a few minutes, I'd like to touch on three issues, just give you a little bit of an overview of the Medical Assistance for Employed Persons with Disabilities Program, MAEPD, describe a little more detail what happens when people turn 65 who have worked on this program as adults, and then give you a few reasons why in this most desperate of budget times, when we've been trying to climb out of a huge chasm for a decade, you should give this consideration and do this. First of all, this is a work incentive program for people with disabilities. The reason people need this program is because the health coverage they have on Medicare or private coverage doesn't cover their needs, and they are left basically with medical assistance. They don't have any other options. Medical assistance to qualify as a person with a disability requires impoverishment, really crushing impoverishment. People can have no more than $3,000. For cash, bank account, savings, whatever. And people have to limit their income. They can't have any more than 100% of the poverty level, $908 a month. If you have $1 more than $908, you have to spend down to 75% of the poverty level, which is $681 a month. Now, I think if you think about that for a minute, you'll realize people really can't make it on that, and so they have to seek other programs, and we have to supplement them in terms of food support and all kinds of other things. So this was a work incentive for people so they could work and keep their earnings, because for every dollar they earned, if they were at 100%, they'd have to pay down to 75%, and they'd have to pay it to the state. The program started in 1999. It was authored and championed by then Representative Kevin Goodnow. It has had consistent, modest growth each year. We now have, I think we have about 95,000 adults with disabilities eligible for medical assistance, but we have 8,000 using this program. So out of those 95,000, we have 8,000 working, and that's been some steady growth, and we're very pleased with that. Second, what happens to people when they turn 65? Well, the impoverishing rules of medical assistance apply to them, and there's no out. They have to spend the savings they've saved for retirement
down to $3,000. They have to do that in the first month they turn 65. So we've, you know, had people lose their homes. You'll hear from people affected. They have to quickly figure out what can they possibly spend it on in a month that they're going to possibly need for the rest of their lives. And they have to pay a spend down. If they've got Social Security, pension, whatever, they have to pay everything over that 75% of the poverty level, $681, to get medical assistance that they absolutely need to be able to get out of bed or to get the mental health services they need or the specialized equipment. So what this bill would do is, A, let them keep those assets to extend their independence as long as possible after 65, but B, try to get federal approval to extend the program, because a lot of people want to keep working after 65. We think the federal government, of course, needs to change the law. Retirement age is going up for everyone. And I think that that eventually will happen, but it's not the case now. So why should you consider this at this most difficult time? Well, first of all, the policy we have, it really defeats all the other investments we make in people with disabilities. The education, the higher education, the encouragement in vocational rehab, and all of the MAEPD program. We defeat it by taking away what we've encouraged people to do in terms of saving for their future. Second, we think this change would actually save money. And that's why we really sought that last provision in the bill to have a broad look at the cost. Unfortunately, I know we can't change the fiscal note rules, but I think in asking for federal approval, we are encouraging the department to take a broad look. The federal government could save on food stamps and subsidized housing. We think the Department of Human Services could save on residential programs, nursing facilities, group residential housing, but other state agencies also provide services in local government, metro mobility, telephone assistance, energy assistance, the list goes on. And we can't really analyze all of that as we're trying to move ahead here, and that's, I think, a big barrier, because ultimately this would save money. And then finally, we have a smaller number of people turning 65 this year. We don't know the exact number, but we need to do this eventually, and we're going to have a transition year when we do it. So it makes sense to do it when we have a smaller number of people to try to hold harmless while we ask for that federal permission. So thank you.
Well, let's take testimony. I see there's three witnesses here, and there's room for a couple minutes each, and then we can have a little discussion. And then our time will be gone. Who's going to go first? Mr. N. Huvillen? Yeah. Yeah, if the pages want to help get the microphone set up and just to get him set there. Do you fit, sir? Is that? You could be on the side, if maybe that'd be easier. Yeah, we have people here, so.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Charles, and I am a lifelong St. Paul life who has a disability. I'm so the palsy. I grew up in the West 7th Street neighborhood, and now I live up in here at Jefferson, Lexington. I am a tax. I work. I am a taxpayer. I have a mortgage. I am involved in my community. I need to tell you my story, not just for me, but for hundreds of working disabled Minnesotans who are caught in the same trap and being forced to lose their homes like me. I am currently eligible for medical assistance for employed persons with disabilities, MAEPD, which allows me to access medical assistance while keeping enough. While keeping enough of my income and assets to live a decent life. I was in school, however, under the present law, the day I turned 65, I will no longer access MAEPD, and I will lose much of what I have worked to save for retirement, and I won't be able to keep much of what I have earned each month. It won't pay me to keep on working. During the time I've been on MAEPD program, because it allows me to pay reasonable premiums to access medical assistance, while allowing me to save money and keep much of my monthly income, I have managed to purchase my own condo, my own van, and I feel that I have become a good member of our community. This has taken a lifetime to do. And now, I and the others like me are being told that because we turn a certain age, we have to give it all. This isn't right. This is not right. All I'm asking for here is what I have earned and what I have saved. I turned 65 in May and will lose access to MAEPD whether I continue working or not in order to remain eligible for medical assistance. I will be forced to keep only $677 a month of my income or pension, which I have paid into for the last 18 years. This is not enough for me to continue my mortgage payments, so I will lose my condo and I will have to go into public housing or nursing home. By creating the MAEPD program, the legislature allowed the disabled population the opportunity to prove to everyone that they could work and be as independent as possible by letting us work and retain a good amount of our assets and monthly income. Now you are saying because we reach a certain age or need a certain amount of care that we need to give up everything we have worked for. These laws need to be changed and changed soon. We must let people keep what they have earned and saved. We can do this by allowing those who turn 65 and have been on the MAPD to keep their retirement or assets, and by seeking federal approval to allow persons over 65 to continue to work. We need to let people continue to work if they wish. I like my job, and I want to keep working. I don't want all the things I have in life that I value, especially my independence, and because I turned 65.
Thank you very much for your testimony. There are two more witnesses, and time is almost gone, so maybe they could at least say hello and take a minute and greet us if they would like. I know they've come some distance and some challenge, but who's the... So Mr. Carlisle, are you here? And then Ms. Stevens?
Chair Abler, my name is Ani Simons, and Mr. Carlisle asked if I would briefly read his comments for him this afternoon.
If they're written, we'll just take them in writing. If he wants to say something himself, I'll be happy to hear him
say
hello.
They are written.
Yeah, so we don't have time to take any longer testimony, but why don't you have him get to the microphone and just greet us? That would be really nice.
Can I explain?
So is he going to get close to the mic? He already said hello, but not into the microphone. So.
If I might, Mr. Chair, explain. Mr. Carlisle had asked if Ms. Simons would read his comments before we knew time was short because his speech
sure,
was
yeah.
very difficult. And she's got really brief comments and can do it quickly. Because
we have 3 minutes to be done.
Three minutes left.
But you know, I want to say hello to Ms. Stevens, and I want to ask the department a question. So
I'll hand out Mr. Carlisle's comments. They are very well. He's a semi-retired tax accountant who very much life was dramatically impacted financially when he turned 65. Please, members, take time to read his comments. He spent a lot of time putting them together and has a very powerful story about the impact of turning 65 and being on MAEPD.
Yeah, and maybe you can get by the microphone so we can at least get on the camera to be recognized. So is that possible? Ann, could you push him up? Then Ms. Stevens, if she wants to come up. Hello. Thank you for coming. I'm sorry the time ran out on us. We thought a half hour would be enough for this, but we were wrong. So I apologize for that. So welcome to the committee.
This is Jim, and
My story is similar to Jim's. And my name is Roseanne Severance, and I live in Minneapolis. I'm now 68 years old. I did work and retired from the U, but I do continue to work at the Guthrie Theater. I would work more if I had the option of MAEPD. Right now, I receive Social Security, which I paid into during my working years, and I now have to pay $1,876 per month of my Social Security and employment to medical assistance each month. I now have $677 a month to live on. I did apply for, I have been getting food assistance and energy assistance, but as of this month, they now count gross income, not what you have to live on. So we're no longer eligible for either one of those programs. Probably within the year, I will lose my modified van that I paid for when I worked, because I won't be able to afford insurance, license fees, and gas. This means I won't be able to visit my family on holidays or be independent too. After age 65, MAEPD after age 65 would allow people with disabilities to keep their families together, maintain their homes, and pay their way longer. And most of us do continue to work after 65. And we do contribute as taxpayers and into Social Security. So I've lost everything. They took everything away from me.
Yeah.
So I have nothing, absolutely nothing left.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I got a question for all three testifiers. With someone who is a little gimpy myself, right? What advice do you have for me? Should I continue to be frugal and save for my retirement, or should I have fun?
I think we'll take that as rhetorical.
First off, put your money in a trust. Second off, every single person in this room, all you have to do is walk out the door, mm-hmm. or you get diagnosed with a disease or something, and you will be sitting right where we are, so that you will lose everything too. And if you have a family, it's just a nightmare with the asset, the way things are set up right now. This isn't just us. It's for all of you, too, in your futures.
Thank you. Representative Hosh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm so happy to see this issue back in front of us. Just a little bit of history. We passed this out of the House in 2007, and it was in the conference committee, and it was the very, very last item dropped before we came to an agreement with all the parties involved. And it was a tough item to see leave. The stories are heart-wrenching, but important. We heard stories also of essentially forced divorce, and because of the way that we do income and asset calculations, our policies encourage poverty and discourage work. I don't think anybody here wants that. The costs associated with this are minimal compared to the human costs, and with my other job outside the legislature, I don't bring it up a whole lot, but the consumers that I work with, about half of them are on this program. And if it weren't for MAEPD, they would not be working, because it just doesn't make sense. So I really hope, even in the days of limited resources, that this committee can put this at the top of their priority list.
Well, thank you. I think it's been quite compelling. I have a homework department question for the department. I won't make you come down, Ms. Bartola, but you can ask the people there. On this fiscal note, it's about $100,000 in the biennium. Mm-hmm. I don't see on here an add back for nursing home care if we don't do it. I don't know why we don't have the bill be more dynamic. Why it doesn't include that, and I think it absolutely needs to reflect, if we don't do this, that we're going to spend some money here. And I'm not being unkind to you, but I don't think it should take a waiver or any kind of change in law to include costs we know we're going to get. Otherwise, we have a fake budget, we have a fake set of bills, because we're not considering all the realities. And the reality is, these bad things happen to this nice woman and these nice people who came to us today, and many that they represent. And so this should be free, in my opinion. Shouldn't cost $100,000. It should be a savings, like we know it is in the real picture. So if you can go home and work on that, and I'll not bring you down today because we're out of time. But that's my question for the department. Representative Paymar and Morrow, and appreciate you coming down with this, and to the testifiers who came, very compelling. Thank you very much for coming to us today. Thank you, sir. We'll see Tuesday. We're adjourned.